Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Are we good to go? Andy just asked us to be perfectly still, and it was mad. Sean, you were really, really good still. I bet you were brilliant at musical statues at kids' parties. Absolutely brilliant. It is Tour Live. It is John Givens. I'm joined, as of just previewed there, by Sean Bennett, also by Andy Heaton, and by Ian Ryan. Yeah, Ian, you were good being still as well, mate. Don't let me talk
too hard.
But we are here, and we're all excited because we are live across many, many platforms. So welcome to all of you joining us on more platforms that I know what to do with, to be honest with you. If you are watching live as well, then get your questions in for part two now, please, as we're going to do a live AFQ football. That's one of our subscriber shows. We're going to do it live in part two, so get your questions in now, preferably on YouTube and Facebook, because that's where I know where to look for them. But if you do it on one of the others, I believe Michael's going to text me and let me know. If you listen as a podcast, then coming up, we've got inserts from Jamie Webster and Tom Casty from LFC. It's LFC. So something for absolutely every type of listener. But first, on Saturday, Liverpool played Burnley, and Ian Ryan would all go in the match.
Oh, mate, I can't wait. Honestly, absolutely can't wait. It's been a long time coming, John. I mean, I went to the Crystal Palace game, last game of the season, and that felt fantastic compared to what we've been used to in terms of watching games in the house by ourselves or, you know, trying to grab some time in the pub with mates. So I think Saturday will just be a completely different level, and it just feels like it's been such a long time. And even that Palace game I referenced before, whilst it was great just getting back in, it didn't half still feel quite clinical. You know, you're having to wear your mask and stuff. Although I remember like getting some food and drink at half time. And I think the exception was if you're having food and drink, you didn't have to wear your mask. But the steward came up to me and said, "Listen, can you put your mask on in between bites and sips?" I was like, "Fucking hell, mate. Between bites and sips. I'm taking a piss." Practical, is it? You know what I mean? And there was like no one within like kind of 5 or 6 yards here. So I'm hoping it's a little bit different than that, but listen, the main thing is just getting back in, and I'm making a difference again, John. I think the point for me was, whilst you're watching it by yourself or with mates away from the ground, you didn't feel like you could make a difference. You didn't feel like you could get behind them. You didn't feel like you could edge them on. You didn't feel like you could get on top of the referee and maybe make a slight difference that way to your team. So I honestly can't wait for Saturday.
Sean, are you looking forward to making a difference on Saturday lunchtime?
I can't wait. I've got to credit John for the assist as well.
All that's here.
I literally can't wait. It's better than Christmas. It's better than getting Glastonbury tickets. It's just, I feel like I can't sleep. I'm made up. It's nearly kickoff because I've just got to wait that bit less to get in the ground. And I just can't wait for the ritual. Like, I love like the walk up to the ground. I love going in the pubs before. I love getting my scouse pie at half time. I love, you know, going to the pub after, chatting about the game. It's just I've missed it so much. Like my last game was last competitive game I would have gone to was the Atletico Madrid game, which, what's that, March 2020, like,
yeah,
17 months ago, which was it was actually mad that game even went ahead. But it's been so long, you know. Went to one of the friendlies, and to be fair, the atmosphere was bossing the friendlies. But I just thought, I can't wait to be in the ground, like telling the referee to F off and just feeling like you're making an actual difference in the game, you know, cheering every slide tackle. I cannot wait.
My DMs are going to be wild before Chelsea now. Sean's out of me as a ticket hookup, but even wilder than yours, Andy, normally are. You must be made up, mate. Can you remember your routine? Can you remember when you do? What are you wearing?
I don't know what you're talking about in regards to tickets, John. I have no idea whatsoever. Yeah, no, what is a ticket now? I mean, it's all in the past, isn't it? I'm looking forward to getting back to work. And that sounds a little bit weird, but like actually going to like the match day tour experience thing, because it's kind of like you spend all week gearing up towards it, and
you know, the highlights of your week is actually getting wherever you're going, dropping the gear off. It's like getting off your morning paper round when you're a kid on a Saturday, you know what I mean? Just build it up, getting in there, getting everything set up, walking up, seeing it. I sound like I'm excited that, you know, because inside of me I am. It's like just seeing that grass. And I did go to the Palace game, but Ian's right, it wasn't the same. It was kind of, you felt like you were watching the game in like an old game of Pro Evo when you see them little statues in the crowd, like every five seats, where this feels a little bit more earthy, a little bit more real. And, you know, and it's the start of something as well. Liverpool have won the first game. We want to get in, make Anfield back what it was. Let's forget those six games because no one was fucking there to see them, so they didn't happen, right?
Especially the Everton one.
What one? I don't know what you're talking about. Just get in there, get a good result, get right into those bastards early on, and make a day of it and have a bevy. And what's that? That's the only thing about it. I hate an early kickoff until the game's finished, and then you can have a bevy, and it's great.
Well, we haven't had the emails yet, have we, telling us what time they want us into the ground? They're throwing on the 290 pints here. I don't know. I might just watch Mo Salah warm up, to be honest with you, mate.
You'll be on over those 290 pints, lad. Don't be telling me any
Yeah, and I'm saying this now, I'll probably miss kickoff.
Absolutely, yeah. What happened to our first half? I mean, the club have done what they can, I suppose, to entice you to get in there early. I think, you know, it'd be good if, you know, if people are going to get in there early, then maybe after the game, people can spend a little bit of time, you know, with the local boozers or, you know, the local eateries and stuff, because obviously those guys will miss out. But I suppose from a club's point of view, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. They want to get people in. Yes, we could have a conversation about what's gone on before, but I think, and I had a little moan about it the other day in terms of the staggered times, because, you know, you've got your routine and you know, obviously it's been such a long time coming. You want to see the people that you're used to seeing before the game and after the game. But I think, as you know, I've started to think about it a little bit more, I think now I'm in a place where the most important thing is just getting in and getting ready for the match. And as I say, I'm sure this will all start to sort itself out as we move through the kind of weeks and stuff. So the most important thing, Gibbo, is get behind and get in. And if you get in early, I think, you know, there's a chance just to create a little bit of an atmosphere. And I think Burnley's normally one where, you know, if it's in normal times, it's probably a bit of a game where maybe it's a little bit timid because it's 12:30 and it's Burnley. But I don't think Burnley will know what's hit them come the weekend. Honestly, I think it'll be absolutely ferocious. I think there'll be 18 months of just pent up kind of frustration, if you like. We've been starved of watching this team, and we've all been on record saying it's one of the greatest teams any of us have watched, and we've not had that opportunity, and those players have not had the opportunity to play in front of fans as well. And I think you'll see some big performances come the weekend. I think it'll make the hair stand up on one or two players next, you know, players who just love playing in front of a crowd. We know who they are, and we've all missed it. And I think the manager, probably more than anyone, you know, you pick up on little bits he says in his press conference and just bits around pre-season. He can't wait to have us back in there. So I think, you know, Burnley, it's going to be a tough afternoon for them, do you want to suggest?
Yeah, just in the comments here on YouTube, Avdi says, even though it's a 12:30 kickoff, Anfield should be rocking. And I completely agree, Sean. And, you know, just hearing Ian talk then, I was thinking, you know, we're all saying how much we're looking forward to it. I bet the players are buzzing as well. The players are going, oh, is right, Ian Ryan's going to be back here, the big fella. And, you know, and the 50,000 others who are going to be cheering them on as well. You know, they're going to be absolutely buzzing, especially, you know, the showman on the pitch, a couple of which got a goal last week to get them going.
They will. I think it'll spare them on. But I actually thought one of the biggest things that held us back with not having crowds in last season is, yes, we loved the flying into tackles and we loved the pressing and just a little, you know, the little 1% that we know, it just shows that they're putting a graft in. But also just with the defence, I was finding, like, even them gasps or, you know, the little signals that, you know, a ball is going over the top or you should be tracking back, I honestly think they were missing that. And I think those little signals of, like, when to pull your socks up as well does make a difference. So I'm sure they'll be buzzing. I think Klopp will play right into it as well, and then he'll get everyone going. Can't wait.
Yeah, there's a little comment on Facebook here from Ian McKelly. Says, hey, Andy, looking forward to seeing everyone around my seats again. And I'm really looking forward to that. There's a few people who sit next to me. Callum, if he's listening, him and his dad, who I've not seen since Atletico. You know, a few other sort of around me as well, who you just sort of know to let on to and things like that. It is that sort of community and people who you're on first name terms with, or just that fellow who shouts, so, you know, this thing every game, you know, it's boss, isn't it? I can't wait to see all the lads and lasses who sit by me.
Yeah, it's a ubiquitous scout nod, isn't it? I mean, there's a fella who sits behind me. He's been there since I was going there, so over 20-odd years. Don't know the fella's name. Never asked. Have a little natter, and he's always got his little bag of sweets there passed down the row. Well, no, you're right. It is the little things. And I am looking forward to it. On personal note, it's a little bit sad because my dad stopped going now because he's a little bit old. So it's going to be a bit of a new experience for me. Yeah. So, I feel sorry for the poor bastard who's got to sit in front of me who's here. I'm going to chew off every game moaning about one thing and the other because my dad's got to put up with it because he's my dad. But, all of that. And then just feeling like it's home. Do you know what I mean? That sounds mad. But like I think if you've had the same seat for a period of time as well, it's almost as if the seat's actually yours, you own it, and you just like occasionally when you can't make it, let someone else sit there and that. But I'm looking forward to that very, very much so.
Very much so. We've just got to talk about the actual football, I suppose. And it's funny here. I'm quite funny about marking seasons against the last one. So as in game by game, and not as in, oh, we had 12 points after four games, more like how we got on against that opposition. And if we can get ahead of where we were, I get really into it. And so Burnley beat us last year. So my thinking of this is if we beat Burnley, then that's 3 points ahead of where we were, you know, what we got last season. Suddenly, you know, we're on 100 points in my head and I'm doing maths. But it is, you know, they come to Anfield and one of those teams in that horrendous one who did us. You know, I don't think you can look too much into that because completely different times, completely different squad from a point of view of Liverpool. But it is an opportunity to get 3 points that we didn't last season.
100%. And you're right to say, John, the Liverpool team that they face Saturday at 12:30, It's not even close to what they faced when they took that record from us. And listen, fair play to them. They came and they took advantage of a situation, and you know we couldn't turn the screw that night, and we didn't really have the resources to be able to bring people off the bench to make a difference. I think Saturday's just a different kettle of fish, to be honest with you. There's absolutely stacks of players there who are game changers. You've seen what's come back against Norwich, you know, and I think the manager will have a few things on his mind in terms of tweaks and maybe changes, but I don't think he'll do an awful lot. I think you'll see Fabinho start, for instance, because I think he will have one eye on the Chelsea game, and I think that will be at the forefront of his mind as well as Burnley, thinking, well, there's one or two lads here that I've got to get fit and firing for that Chelsea game in terms of getting the minutes. So I think Fabinho will come in, and that immediately makes a difference because, you know, James Milner, as good as he is, as good as he's been, he'd probably say himself he doesn't really want to play six for Liverpool. And I know he wasn't deepest midfielder all the time against Norwich, but predominantly that's where he was mainly based. And I think Fabinho, all of a sudden, you saw it against Norwich, John, he comes on, the levels go up. And why wouldn't he? Because he's the best at what he does. Yeah. So I think that's one thing. I think the manager will be really, really pleased with what he saw centre-half-wise against Norwich. And I think, you know, it's another one for Virgil to get through, slightly different challenge. You'd imagine there's a lot more coming at him early, you know, so he'll have that where he's maybe going for more headers, coming down, landing. If he comes through this one unscathed, it's another big tick in the box for him in terms of confidence. And I think Joe Matip at the minute, whilst it's one game a week, it suits Joe Matip down to the ground. And I think, you know, he is a player who can just come back from an injury and just look like he's never been away. You know, a little bit like, you know, Leslie King used to do for Spurs, go back even further. Paul McGrath used to do it an awful lot. Fellas who can just come in and just look like they've never been away. And then I think maybe there's a little question around what he does with a Thiago or a Henderson. Again, with that Chelsea game on the horizon, I think he'll want to get minutes into at least one of those from the start. I'd imagine it's Thiago, maybe. He looked a little bit further ahead of Jordan. And then maybe it's half an hour for Jordan at the end of the game and stuff. So there's one or two tweaks there. But I have to say, you know, you look at that game last week, and you know, if it ends up being something similar this weekend, John, you wouldn't be surprised in terms of scoreline.
Yeah. Quite a few debates over midfield in the comments as well. 1892 Reds podcast agrees with you, Ian. He thinks it'd be Keita staying, but Thiago and Fabinho, he's got options there, Sean. You know, you'd love to see, I think, Fabinho back in. I think we all would. And I think, as Ian says, with half an eye on Chelsea, you know, as well, it wouldn't be a bad thing at all to get him sort of 60, 70 minutes at least in this. But, you know, there's positions to play for, there's options for him. And, you know, you can make a case for a few of the lads, I think.
Yeah, you could. I agree with Ian on that. I feel like we were missing a proper number six. I know there was a staff flying around that Milner covered more ground in the whole of the Premier League and that opening weekend, which is amazing, but I think you're kind of feeling that he's losing a bit of yards of pace at the minute. You're seeing that with some of the late tackles, you know, he was getting balked So I think Fabinho is a no-brainer, but I think, yeah, the behind the closed doors friendly was interesting, wasn't it? Because you can see who he's pushing to get match fit. I can't ever remember Liverpool ever really doing that when the season started, since I can remember watching footy. So yeah, I think that's a signal. I don't think he's going to throw both Thiago and Henderson back in. I don't think he needs it. I think we've got the luxury of a selection headache at the minute, and how good does that feel to say after so long? And he just does need to rush them back. And you've seen with the centre backs, he's not getting everyone back in at the same time. I do feel like he'll get Henderson back in for this first home game. Maybe Thiago coming back in the game after. But it's a great headache to have. I'm sure Klopp will be made up.
Yeah, options all of a sudden, Andy, not bad for a squad that wasn't meant to be sort of capable of challenging. You know, options are centre-half, although I think he probably will go for the two options in midfield. And also up top, because Bobby looked all right when he came on, didn't he? And so there's a question over who he goes for at number nine too.
Yeah, this paper-thin squad that everyone's moaning about is a bit mad, isn't it? They completely changed the midfield. And, I mean, I think the only areas where you couldn't confidently change everyone apart from Verge is it's probably fullback.
Yeah.
With Trent. But no, Firmino was a good shout. I don't know, it's a bit of a mad one, because normally, given the season we've had, it's weird because your first 11, you'd think week in, week out, it tends to pick itself. But with this, you literally can't. It's almost impossible. I was thinking, then what Charm was saying about Henderson, you know, you'd expect him to get back in if he's fit, but then, you know, you've got Thiago there and Fabinho. There's three. You could argue would start every week, but then you've got the lads who started last week, and everyone's saying, you know, me especially, and I've said it before, I think if we can get see Kay to get five games back to back, you know, to really establish himself and get form and fitness. I mean, I'm glad I'm not the manager, put it that way. What I would say is maybe he'd be a little bit steady with it being Burnley and with, you know, Verge still working his way back up, in his own words as well. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe more of a steady midfield and then trust your front three or whatever the makeup of that front three is to do the business. And then you've got a bench there as well if things aren't working out. You know, you've got it. So if you say Firmino starts, Jota's on the bench there. Or if, you know, we're comfortable in the second half, you can give Konate his bow, which I think is going to be important for us. Especially him. And you can even change it up in midfield if it needs to be. You've got options. Just awesome playing for us if we start well. And, you know, and as was mentioned earlier, even for half to half kickoff, we're right at it from the get-go, so they can be right at it.
Absolutely. Who would you go up top here? I mean, Andy makes a good point there in terms of the subs and in terms of remembering the, you know, players can come on and make an impact. And there was a stat knocking around in the week after Firmino came off the bench and scored, that Jurgen Klopp, since Jurgen Klopp took over, Liverpool have had more substitutes score than any other team. You've been in the Premier League in that time, which shows he knows what he's doing in terms of throwing these lads on. So he will have half an eye on that, but obviously we want to start stronger. We want to, you know, put ourselves at them right from the off. So who would you go number nine?
I think it's a real difficult one, John. I think you talk about the team. I think that's the area where it feels like a little bit of a flip of a coin, to be honest with you. Because I think Firmino has shown in the pre-season games when he came back and when he came on against Norwich that he doesn't look far away in terms of fitness. And I think he does come back late with Brazil. But then obviously, you know, you see Richarlison start the first game for Everton. So, you know, there is something around just keeping these players ticking over at times. And do they always need the break? I mean, you know, I think some more than others do. But then you've got Jota starting last week and scoring. And I like Jota. I like him from the bench because I think he does come on and he makes an impact. So I totally get that argument. And I think there's definitely substance to that. But I really like his movement in the box. And I think if you're Burnley, and they're not the most mobile centre-halves at Burnley. Yes, they're good in the air. And don't get me wrong, they'll put the body on the line when they have to. But I think in terms of movements and mobility, Jota's got that. And I just love the positions he takes up between the sticks. So he's always a threat in the six-yard box. And to be fair to Firmino, listen, he comes on against Norwich and he takes his cut really well. And he's in that position I've just talked about then. But I'd probably start Jota and then maybe look to introduce Firmino on about 60, similar to Norwich. Again, with one eye on Chelsea, because I think if you start to speak about that game, and I'm sure we will next week, that's one where maybe you're thinking you'd want Firmino to be starting it. But I think Burnley, slightly different challenge. I'd be really fine if Jota was starting, given his movements.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you'd be fine with either Sean, wouldn't you? And as Ian says, it is a sort of tough decision. He's led me more towards Jota there. He did a very persuasive argument.
Easily led you, Gibbo.
Wait till you see me Saturday night, mate. But I mean, did he persuade you, Sean? Because I mean, whoever he picks is a great option. I mean, I think Jota's going to get some goals this season.
Yeah, you nearly did. I think I need some more of them 290 pints on Saturday, then we'll see. I think it'll be Bobby, and I think Klopp loves how, well, he loves being unpredictable, and I think he loves the fact that he's got that option now. I was looking at the stats as well, and Firmino scored more goals against Burnley than any other Liverpool player in the Premier League. So there's your omen straight away. But yeah, I just think, for me, I almost think the opposite of what Ian said. I feel like Bobby almost needs to start a game and really feel his way into it. And I don't know if Bobby's as impactful off the bench, whereas I think Jota, because he is so versatile, like he's just on all around the box. He can head it from places that don't even look like they're, you know, they're even on for a goal. And I feel like he's really explosive off the bench. And I think if we need that option, I just feel like Jota will make more of an impact when he comes on. And also, just going off the friendlies as well, I think Firmino's link up and understanding with Tsimikas was great. I think there was a bit of a you know, partnership and link up working there. So I'd like to see Bobby starting, and I think he's got a kind of Bobby again with his type of player. I think if a few games out he can fall out of form. So it's like he's got to manage this rotation quite carefully. So he's giving everyone a chance, but he's not playing on anyone out of form. If that makes sense.
Yeah, great options anyway. We just need to all get in. Andy, he'll be fine, won't it? I'm one of them. I'll be fine. It'll be all right on the day. Everyone's phone's going to work. Sean's not going to go out all night and come with a phone that's dead. She'll be fully charged. We'll all be there ready to go. We'll all get in. We'll all have a beer. We'll all cheer on them. The Reds are going to be brilliant.
Well, I've sold a load of my Anfield Rap shares and invested in mobile charging device stations outside Anfield. Five to go. If your ticket's dying, tell you what, there's money to be made there. Think about it. You've come all the way up from London on that train. You've been battering your phone. You've had it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, fingers crossed, it'll be all right. And listen, it might be a little bit inconvenient for the first few games, but if the alternative's not going, then
yeah.
Sad. We'll just swallow it. We'll just swallow it. And it will be fine. I'm really confident tomorrow. I am really, really confident tomorrow. And I think Jürgen's got a bit of an axe to grind with Dyche after last year. Didn't he have a bit of a set to towards the end of the game? So, yeah, great. I'm just looking through Burnley's squad as well. They haven't really done much. I think they've sold one centre-half and bought another one in.
Yeah, well, it's funny, the third favourites to go down with the bookies, which surprised me, but it's quite an interesting thing in itself. Yeah.
Well, they've got new owners as well, and they don't seem to be investing, and there's all off-the-pitch stuff going on. Very much, it's like a mini Hicks Gillette thing for those who are boring like me and want to look into that kind of stuff. But no, they did seem to look leggy towards the tail end of last season, so hopefully, yeah, we can get into them, give them a bit of a shock and send a message to the rest of the league, especially those Sky Sports pundits who were writing it off and saying we'll struggle for fourth despite being finishing third last year. But who might talk?
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Lovely 3 points, lovely message to the rest of the Premier League. That's all hope. We've got that to talk about at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon. Right, coming up. So part two is coming straight up if you're live. So we'll just have a 5-10 second pause, and then part two will be coming straight up. Don't forget to get your answers. Sorry, for your questions in for AFQ Football, which is something that we're doing in part two. So get your questions in, specifically if you're on YouTube, because that's the main way I've managed to figure it out so far. Get your questions in and we'll be promoting them to the panel. But if you're listening on a podcast, you've got a couple of inserts now. You've got Jamie Webster and Tom Casty from LFC having a chat with us about some stuff that's going on there. So if you're in the podcast, enjoy the inserts. If you're live, just give us 5 seconds and we'll be back. Up the Reds. And it's John Gibbons for Tour Live. I'll keep calling it the Weekend for a few weeks as well. We still call it the Pink, don't we? But a bit of a change this week. This season, Tour Live, but still going to be focusing on brilliant things that are going on in the city as well as the football. And a brilliant thing that's been going on in the city and within the football for a while has been Jamie Webster, who's coming this week. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John, as always.
So I want to talk a little bit about your new single. It's absolutely boss. It feels like a bigger sound to me. I don't know if that's something that you'd be conscious of. When I was listening to it, I thought it's someone who's maybe a bit more comfortable being part of a band now, and it's a big sound.
Yeah, it's definitely always the way I wanted to go, but obviously with the first record, everyone knew me as like an acoustic sort of rough and ready from the terraces singer, so to go from that to a fully polished debut album with all singing, all dancing, it just, I don't think that it would have crossed over in the right way, and people might not have quite understood, you know, what I was trying to do. So it was always the plan between me and a label to develop that sound. And obviously, as the more you get into songwriting and into music, your tastes and your inspirations sort of develop and you want to follow them. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a bigger sound. The rest of the tunes will follow that suit, you know what I mean? It's definitely more singing, more dancing. Part of that's down to the where we went to record all the songs. Obviously, we recorded that song with an album.
Yeah.
In Rockfield Studios in South Wales, which is obviously where some massive bands like Queen, Oasis, you could just go through them all, Black Sabbath, Ace, Paolo Nutini, I literally could, Bowie, Iggy Pop, Stone Rose, I could go on and on and on. All these big artists have recorded some big songs there. So it's like, you can't really go there and do things by halves, do you know what I mean? And like the producer who I'd worked with, he's a platinum selling record producer, Dave Ehringer, he's worked with the Manic Street Preachers for the best part of 20 years. He's worked with Tom Jones, Robert Plant, The Who. He's worked with all these people, and you know, to go in with a producer like that, you don't really want to do a stripped back album. You want to use his experience and his skills in music to sort of get the best sound that you can. And also the musicians that I'm playing with, like you said, it is definitely, I'm more comfortable, I'm writing knowing that I'm playing with these lads, you know, on stages and in studios. So when I'm writing songs, I'm writing with them lads in mind now. Yeah. And it definitely is a more developed sound. It's a bigger sound. But I do think it's better, do you know? I do think it's more of a singer-songwriter. It's more of a band, organic sort of together sound. And the way we recorded all the songs was live in the room together. We didn't sort of track things or not. We done overdubs with guitar parts and obviously vocals later on. But for the main part, there was just four of us in a room playing together with headphones on, you know, recorded live. And it was just a boss way to do it. And I think, you know, from what the feedback I've had from Days Unknown, the single, it's been great. Everyone's really, really, you know, appreciated the development of the sound and what I'm trying to do. You know, I'm still banging the same drum. The things that I'm writing about are still the same as what I always have done and probably always will do. And it's real life issues and real life, you know, going ons. But it's definitely in a more developed and almost subtle way, you know, in the way that I'm getting it. It's less, the lyrics I think are less bang in your face than some of the first, from the first album, but I still think they tell the right story and they still, you know, they still get my point across of what I want to say. And I'm just, yeah, I'm just, but the reaction from everyone, like I said, it's been, I really didn't expect people to take to it so quickly. Yeah. I thought it might be a little bit of a, almost like a, not comparing myself to these lads in any way, but almost an Arctic Monkeys third album thing where people had to sort of listen to it a couple of times to really get what they were trying to do, because it is quite a big, sound-wise, it's quite a big difference from some of the first stuff. And but the fact that people have just got into it straight away is obviously what you want, and me management, me label are proper buzzing with it. They were really, really, we had targets set for the first day of release, and it smashed all them targets. So yeah, just thank you to everyone who supports me and made it possible. And if you haven't, you know, as a listen up to now, defo get on to Spotify or iTunes or whatever it is that you listen on and have a listen to Days Unknown. And you know, I'm sure, I think it's quite a catchy tune. I think it's writing about something that's quite important, and if you're into that sort of stuff, you'll definitely like it.
Absolutely. You talked a little bit about, you know, the developing the sound, but keeping the almost the spirit the same there. How hard is that to do once you sort of had success? Because I know some singers in the past and some songwriters in the past have said, oh, you know, you're writing from your bedroom and maybe, you know, you're working and stuff like that. You're a working man, or people might be on the dole or whatever, and you're sort of writing about what you see in your life. And then you've had a top 10 album now, so you've sort of been taken a little bit away from that. Does it then become tricky, or do you think, no, actually, I'm still living where I always have. I'm still the same person, and you know, I still know the people who I'm writing about.
Well, there's an aspect of both. It is harder because, you know, obviously you feel like, you know, have I exercised that point in my first album, you know, like, obviously I feel strongly about these things still, but, you know, it's, you don't want to be tarnished with the brush of, oh, that's all he sings about, sort of thing. So it was more like, I wanted to tell stories of real people, you know, and that's what I always want to do. It might not always necessarily be myself, and the more and more that I move away from being an electrician, which I haven't done now for 2 or 3 years, you know what I mean? I haven't been, apart from when Timo asked me to do a job in his house the other week, pain in the ass, but I've done it for him. But like I say, you know, the more I'm moving out of this, there is, even in my head, there's the fear that you lose concept of what is actually going on in those aspects of life, but I've got plenty of friends who keep me grounded, do you know what I mean? Like, if my head goes a bit too far above that pedestal, it's knocked down with a hammer, you know, before you can even blink. So, to that aspect, you know, it keeps me where I need to be in order to write the songs that I want to write, and it doesn't always have to be about myself. Like I said, I can look at other people's situations, and I could even watch a film or a documentary and take inspiration for that, and really develop that idea and put it into a song. So it's been difficult, but the way that I'm putting it, I think I've wrote more in third person now. Okay. So, and I always like the way, you know, songwriters do that, where they sort of, you know, like Elton John done it a lot, where he talks about people called Daniel and stuff like that, and he really, like, Benny and the Jets, you know, he tells stories about people who you don't know, but by the end of the song, you feel like you know this person, and you feel like you can understand, you know, people who live the same life as this person and stuff like that. And that's the way I've tried to sort of develop a lot of the tunes. I've sort of tried to tell it in third person, and but these third people could represent so many of us, if that makes sense. And obviously the music that I'm listening to, I was getting into the Talking Heads, Traveling Wilburys, just listening to a lot more West Coast stuff, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Fleetwood Mac a lot more, and, you know, that's where the sounds of this album have been driven from. And Mick Head, I've delved more into, like, in my opinion, like, proper singer-songwriters, and just, for me, proper music. It's proper got a hold of me, this sort of stuff, and I'm trying to emulate that in what I do. Obviously, your influences rub off on you, but it's definitely a progression. But at the same time, I am, and I hope I always will be, the same person that people know me as, and, you know, there will be no filter in terms of what I'm writing about. I would never worry about, you know, radio stations or playlists getting in the way of what I want to get across. It's never, you know, songs with Tory in, by and large, are not going to get on the radio, and I know that, but it doesn't stop me releasing them. Likewise, you know, I've got songs on the album that the first line of the song is just, I can't say it, but I will say it. It says the TV's broke. There's a pale fat joke on the news talking shit again. You know, that by and large is a fair.
You said you stole out early.
It's not gonna get on the radio. Yeah. It's probably not gonna get massive playlists in the UK or America. But I'm being true to myself, and I'm being true to the people who I'm writing for. And I could, unless I go, this second album makes me a gajillionaire, and I go that far out of touch, and I'm flying around on private jets, I can't see there being that much of a change in what I'm writing about. The way that I put those songs and stories across in terms of the sound, and the way that I, you know, write my lyrics, they may be more developed, and they may be different as the years and as the albums go on, but I will always be me, and I will always try and be true to, like I say, the people, myself and the people who've put me in this position, because obviously they put me in this position because they want to hear real things, and they want to hear songs about real life and things that they can relate to. And that's always just, I think that's the only way I could write a song. I couldn't write a song about a lifestyle that I don't live, or that I've never lived, or that people whose circles I walk in don't live, you know what I mean? Life is such a, and the life's the working class life, it's got so many topics and so many, you know, good sides to it, bad sides to it, so many escapes, so many joys. So it's just such a broad spectrum, and there is more of us than there is anyone else in the world. So to me, that's why I'm writing for people like me and you, and like our listeners today, you know what I mean? It's all about being relative for me, and it's all about really almost creating a movement. And, you know, the stories that I'm selling in my songs, a lot of them follow a certain political angle, and it's not like I'm trying to brainwash people, but at the same time, if my songs, you know, do make people aware of certain things that are going on, and, you know, make people aware that things can change in certain ways, then that's unbelievable for me, because that's, I think music should be at forefront of movements, and it should be, you know, mixed within people's lifestyles and stuff like that. You know, look at what Bob Dylan done all those years ago. He was like government enemy number one, and if I can be that, that'd be great, because I fucking hate the government, you know what I mean? So yeah, I'm just proper looking forward to what's coming.
And this bigger sound as well, I presume you're looking forward to more people hearing it live, because, you know, I saw a bit of footage of you playing a festival. It sounded boss, you know, you rocking out with the band and people going mad for it. But you can't wait for more and more people to hear these songs live.
Yeah, well, like, I seen Stop Making Sense over lockdown for the first time, which is obviously the Talking Heads concert from 1984. And that, like, was just like, that's what I want to do. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to walk around in a big blow-up grey suit and dance, like. But to have, like, I know I write music now with backing vocals in a new album's got plenty of BVs, plenty of different instruments, pianos, three or four guitars going at one time. So somewhere along the line, I'm going to have to emulate that live. And I want, you know, I fully believe that the more the merrier on stage, you know what I mean? Musicians bouncing off each other and feeding off the crowd. That's where you get your best shows. You know, when you go see Paul McCartney, it's not just him stood on the stage, is it?
Yeah.
He's got 20 people with him sometimes. I've got string quartets playing on the album. I want to play with the string quartet live as well. I want it all. Do you know what I mean? I want to do what I've seen on the telly. And, you know, I'm working as hard as I can to get there. And people will see, you know, when they come to the shows, they will see a big, big difference sonically. They'll hear a big difference sonically, and they'll see a big difference on stage to anything you've ever seen in a Jamie Webster show. You know, we're talking lights, we're talking proper production, we're talking a proper band, we're talking the full shebang, as they say. And, you know, like I said, this has been my dream for such a long time, to be able to go. And I always said, if I could break the city and get out there on tour with musicians and play my own songs to places across the country and have people singing them songs back to me, even if it only lasted for 6 months, it's my dream's been achieved. And I'm just made up that I'm finally stepping into those areas. And, you know, I'm going to take the bull by the horns as much as I can and attack it and have it as much as I can. Like the festival the other day, I said to the lads, look, it's my first festival, so we just go out there and give it to them as much as we can. It was a proper punk set. We played about 5 songs in 2 minutes, you know what I mean? But the adrenaline, it was when I realised they had 2 songs left for 15 minutes to go. I was like, right, talk to the crowd a little bit. Yeah, do you know what I mean? But it was boss, and I just can't wait to do more of it. And to anyone who's supported me, like, up to this point, you know, you've made me dreams come true. And to anyone who's maybe looking to get involved and seeing what's been going on around me, I urge you to do so, because I can't wait to perform to people like you. I can't wait to make new fans and, you know, have new people singing the songs, more people singing the songs back to me. It is an unbelievable feeling. It's a feeling like no other, really. Do you know what I mean? As a musician, whether it's Liverpool songs or my own songs, to see a crowd of people belting those back to you, it really does. It puts the ears on the back of your neck, and it makes you, you know, at the time, you maybe take it for granted a little bit, but when I get to sit here with you, Gibbo, and talk about those experiences and certainly look back at videos, makes you realise what a lucky lad you are, and, you know, how happy I am to be doing this now, full time. And yeah, it's only down to the people who've put me there, and I can only say thank you as much as I possibly can to let those people know how grateful I am.
Yeah, it's right. It's only going one way, but it's been brilliant to have you in, Jamie. I would encourage everyone to download or stream the single and check out Jamie's live shows up and down the country as well. But nice one for coming in, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gibbon.
It's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap, and I'm here to talk about Football Prizes. And Football Prizes, a new partner of the Anfield Wrap, and we're really, really grateful for them to coming on board and supporting what we do. And what Football Prizes do is exactly what it says on the tin. It's football prizes that you can win every week, and this week's competition is a Liverpool bundle, and it is quite the bundle. You can enter a competition to win all of these things. So you ready? Got a Virgil van Dijk signed and framed shirt, a Jürgen Klopp signed and framed montage, a Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher signed and framed Anfield Street sign, and a 21-22 Liverpool home or away shirt of your choice. So you get all of those things. It's just one prize and it costs just £2.95 to enter, with a maximum of 299 tickets in the draw. So that's a 1 in 299 chance, which is pretty good odds. I don't mind that. I'll have a little go myself at just £2.95 to win all of those prizes. Now, the winner will be drawn live at random on Tuesday, the 24th of August, on the Football Prizes Facebook page. You can join live on their Facebook page and have a little look, so it's all clear who is the winner and you can see if your ticket is drawn. Now, best of luck. I really hope an Anfield Rap listener wins that. I mean, mainly me, to be honest with you. But if it's not myself, I hope one of you guys win that. That'd be absolutely fantastic. It'd be a brilliant way to start the season with all of those brilliant prizes. So a link to the prize will go live at 7:30 today. So we're recording this on the Thursday. At 7:30 tonight, you will be able to enter. And it's at footballprizes.co.uk/product/LFC-bundle. So that's www.footballprizes.co.uk/product/LFC-bundle. We'll put a tweet out on our social media tonight with all those details as well. But yeah, fantastic prizes. Only £2.95 to enter. You've got a 1 in 299 chance at maximum of winning this if they sell all the tickets. And yeah, absolutely fantastic prizes. So nice one again to Football Prizes for supporting us. Do get involved. What can you lose? And there's a very, very fantastic thing that you could win. And it is John Gibbons. I'm delighted to be joined in our studio by Tom Cassidy, who's in charge of tourism at LFC. Tom, I feel like I've just done a formal introduction and we're not mates. But Tom, it's lovely to see you in person.
And you, John. Thanks for having us in.
So I want to talk a little bit about some exciting stuff you've got coming up at Anfield that everyone can get involved in. But first of all, how has it been doing your job for the last sort of 12 to 18 months? Because obviously, you know, I've just said there that the word tourism, Liverpool hasn't been able to welcome tourists. Obviously, you're known to throw a decent party or two as well for Liverpool fans all around the world, and we haven't been able to do that. And so it must have been a challenging time for you.
Yeah, I mean, for me and for the tourism industry as a whole, you know, the city region and further afield, you know, when everything stops, people go into a state of panic. So, you know, there's no inbound visitors coming from overseas, you know, people's confidence is low, the consumer confidence is low about, you know, what they can do and how safe is it. So we opened when we could. I think we first reopened in August last year, but then we closed again, you know, and then we opened again. And then this year, you know, we closed. Obviously, as a football club, our primary concern is, you know, is what happens on a pitch on a, you know, on a Saturday afternoon or whenever it is. So, you know, that took precedence. And then, you know, we reopened properly May, just kind of slowly into June, you know, and then some proper numbers coming through in July and August. I mean, I think this is on the backdrop of, you know, we had a record year in 2019. The business has been building and building.
Yeah.
Obviously, some linked into the success that we've had, but, you know, we've got a lot of people working really hard to keep on growing the business. So, you know, we were in a really good place. And then obviously COVID hit. I mean, we're very lucky, you know, working for the football club. We've looked after the staff well. But, you know, the tourism industry kind of just has largely been decimated, you know, so there's not been much good news. But, you know, I'm pleased to be here today and to be talking about some good news as well.
Yeah, so we're here to talk and highlight about stuff you've got coming up over the next month or so, which is includes the return of the Legends tours. So the tours are obviously very popular. People who have done them will have enjoyed them. I've done a little video on YouTube to have a little look at that, sort of highlighting my favourite bits of the tours. But just to add a little bit of stardust to them, you can do a Legends tour as well.
Yeah, we've had to change it. So when we used to do a Legends tour where the legend would be your guide along the route, and that was great because that's the dressing room they got changed in and the tunnel that they, you know, they used to walk down and touch, so they could really bring things to life. We've had to tweak it slightly because, you know, whilst obviously the pitch is the same and part of the stadium are the same where the tours happen, you know, it didn't feel right bringing them round into a dressing room where they haven't got the stories about. So, you know, we still get really good feedback. What happens at the start of it, you know, the visitors, they spend about an hour, maybe an hour and a half with the legend. They go through like a Q&A. One of our tour guides is there as being the host, keeping things moving along, and, you know, everyone gets a chance to pitch in, and it's a really good, you know, insightful, entertaining start to the day. And you know, and people can get autographs and, you know, and photographs, obviously now all within reason, and, you know, and all everything we do has got to be kind of COVID secure as well.
Yeah, some really exciting ones coming up. I'll just sort of read them out. John Aldridge there today, which is great for everybody who was there. Then the 22nd of August, you've got Phil Thompson. 25th of August, Steve McMahon. 26th of August, Phil Neal. 29th of August, Alan Kennedy. 4th of September, Ian Callaghan. And then back on the 11th of September, Ian Callaghan again. I think there's, what, about 5,000 appearances for Liverpool there? How many league titles? About 10 European Cups. It's not bad, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, and whilst a lot of people now would have seen them, you know, on LFC TV or working on different channels, you know, to see them in person, you know, that they still sell really well for us. And, you know, and it's been a really, really interesting.
Lips are all loose when the cameras aren't on them as well, from my experience.
Well, not, hopefully not when they're working for us, because...
No, all within reason, of course. But some of the stories, you know, might be a bit livelier than maybe they're allowed on a Saturday afternoon in Sky.
No, I mean, you know, it's very much it is, notwithstanding what you just said, you know, it's aimed at families as well. Yeah. You know, so when we got games on, you know, we've got people who are travelling from, you know, all the hotspots that they come to come and watch the games. And, you know, and we put a lot of them on either side of that. And obviously now, you know, people haven't been able to travel. So it's been really interesting. You know, it's still been, even though people haven't been able to, you know, to travel overseas. And these, you know, you'd imagine a lot of our Irish fans or Scandinavians, you know, people want to make a bigger deal of it. But they're only coming to Anfield, you know, once in however long, you know, they want to get as much as they can. So that's what it is. But it's been really encouraging that, you know, we took a bit of a punt, if I'm honest, by putting so many on over the summer. But, you know, so far, so good. And, you know, let's hope, both for us, you know, and for the guys as well, let's hope that continues.
Yeah, absolutely. The stadium tour is great. I love it. But with the extra legends Q&A, it's a little bit special. Speaking of which, I want to talk about the Anfield experience as well, which is extra special. So it's a proper day out. Includes a three-course lunch overlooking the pitch. And, yeah, Chris Kirkland and Phil Thompson doing one on 3rd of September. Jan Mulby and Steve McMahon on the 5th of September. That's, you know, a really special day out, maybe as a present for someone at a Big Red.
Yeah. I mean, they've been running now for, I think about 15 years since they were launched, and we've just kept on enhancing them and adding them, you know. And again, with these, you know, a lot of people, maybe 80-90% of these people who come, they buy them as gift vouchers. So what's happened is, not just this Christmas or last Christmas, but the one before, you know, there's been this kind of massive glut of people who've been wanting to redeem the vouchers, but they haven't been able to. So, you know, we thought it was really important to give people the chance, you know, while it is the summer, you know, everything's open, and, you know, everything crossed, there's no further disruption. So we thought it was really important to do so.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. As I say, some fantastic stories there. Lots of people who have been lucky enough to be in the company of, and some brilliant stories. And yeah, a lot of appearances and medals for Liverpool Football Club as well. I read those dates out quite quickly, but if you want to sort of check them out, and I'm sure they'll sort of adapt over the year as well, it's liverpoolfc.com/tours. That's liverpoolfc.com/tours. But yeah, loads more of these plans, and a few more legends I know who are involved, who maybe aren't on that list, Tom, who will be, you know, doing stuff coming up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the newest ones for us is Bruce Grobbelaar. I mean, I haven't been there yet when Bruce has done them, you know, just because I'm busy and kind of work out of the city a lot. But, you know, you can imagine, you know, Bruce with his stories, you know, it's, you know, captivated, very funny, you know. I think it adds a lot of value to, as do all of them as well. You know, I think Steve McMahon is fairly new, but I think, you know, just looking at the list as well, you know, that we've been working with a lot of these guys, you know, over the years.
They love still being involved, don't they? That's where I always take from it, Tom.
Yeah, oh, very much, you know. And I think, even though I mentioned before that Anfield has changed, you know, it's deep down, it still feels like their home as well. So even if some of them are travelling, you know, a good distance to come, you know, you can see at times, you know, they're enjoying it, you know, as much as the punters as well. You know, they kind of feed off each other. I mean, and on the Anfield experience as well, we work with Steve Haversall quite a lot. You know, it's important. It's you know, it's a real kind of high class event, and we treat it with so as well. And I think, you know, look, things do change and evolve, and we've got a few just a few tweaks planned for it, just to make it better, to give it a bit of a refresh. Which you know, again, you know, everything crossed, there's no further disruptions. We get towards Christmas, but, you know, we'll be looking to relaunch some, you know, some new ideas as we get to November, December.
Sounds great. And Steve Haversall, the dictionary definition of high class, I do think, if you look up high class in the dictionary, you get a picture.
He told me to say that.
Oh, no, he's been very good to us, Steve. Very, very good to us over the years. While we're in, Tom, I just want to talk a little bit about a residence offer. We recently promoted that on the Anfield app, and if people go on our YouTube, as I say, you'll see me doing a little tour and promoting this residence offer. It's 25% off at the moment for people in the Liverpool City region. Why was it you decided to do that, first of all?
I think it's really important. You know, not everyone's had a good time through the pandemic, and you know, and whilst you know it's a gesture. You know, I think it's really important to be given something back, and you know, and our captive market now, it is those who are on our doorstep, and you know, so as well as giving something back, they're also potentially our hardest market at times, possibly some of our hardest. People to get through, you know, are those, you know, they come to the game quite a lot, and rightfully so, you know, that they built up their knowledge over the years. So, you know, we just thought it was a nice little incentive, and looking so far, it's proved really popular. It's running up until the end of September, you know, and you know, we'd encourage it, you know, and anyone and everyone to come and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, it is fantastic. And, you know, you say yourself, Tom, people think, oh, I've been in the ground and stuff like that, but to, when you're in the dressing room, and also standing pitch side, it just takes your breath away. You know, my seat's fairly high up in the Kenny Dalglish stand, and when you're standing there pitch side, or you're in Jürgen's, you know, area and looking, it Anfield looks something else from there, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does, John. It's a fab view. You know, I'm up at Anfield maybe once every couple of weeks. And you know, it doesn't stop taking my breath away. You know, I find myself just not aimlessly walking around, but you know, it's important. You know, that this is my job, so it's important just to get a feel, you know, for what the mood of the people on the tour are, and you know, and it is pretty inspiring. So yeah, you know, I couldn't disagree with you on that.
Yeah, so for more on everything that we talked about, as I say, it's liverpoolfc.com/tours, liverpoolfc.com/tours. That's for the Legends tours, the Anfield experiences, and also if you are a local resident, don't forget that offer, 25% off, which is running until the end of September, which is brilliant. Museum as well, we haven't even touched on the museum. It's great, all the European Cups are in there. Oh, the new feature in the museum, which is all about the champions with the league champions win in 19, is absolutely tremendous, so hats off to Warriors for that.
Thanks for that. You know, I think we see it very much as the future. You know, it probably stands out a little bit at the moment. You know, it is very forward thinking, but that's where I think we see the standard of things moving forward. You know, it's there's a great story and a really, really important story to tell about the club's past, but regards to the club's presence and future, you know, we just try to tell it in a slightly different way. So, you know, I look forward to having, you know, with the wider team, more challenges of having to make changes in there, you know, over the next few years.
Yeah, no, but it's a brilliant addition, so nice one. The museum's all part of your ticket, it's all included, and it's a brilliant day out. But Tom, thanks so much for coming in, really appreciate that, and best of luck with the Legends tours.
Thanks, Tom.
That was quick. We're back. Hope you've enjoyed the inserts. If you did, if you are listening on the podcast and all our live people, don't forget you get your questions in for AFQ football. Just before we do that, I did want to touch on something that Liverpool have put out today on their social media channels, and I presume on the YouTube as well, which is a chat with Jürgen Klopp with Paul Lamann. Anfield Wrap listeners will have heard Paul on our show on Monday, and he's also spoken to him, which more excitingly for him, I would imagine, spoken to Jürgen Klopp as well this week. Just regarding the chance that I'm sure people will have seen at Norwich, a couple of the chants that were picked up on and have been discussed in great length. Liverpool Football Club put a statement out earlier in the week condemning the chants. Cop-Outs, who's the LBGT organisation of Liverpool fans that Paul Lamann chairs, put out a statement as well. And then they followed it up with this, and I'm really proud of it, Sean, because I think the easiest thing to do would have been to ignore it. Even worse would have been to try and excuse it, which we saw from Gary Rowett, who's the Millwall manager, sort of tying himself in knots, talking about his own fans booing the taking of the knee. Instead, we've not just condemned it, but we've doubled down with this. And it makes me really proud, sort of, as a Liverpool fan that we are tackling it in this way. And we are leading, I would argue, in terms of how we try and educate our fans.
Yeah, boss, made up to see it. I think it's I think the most important word is just listening to people. You know, we all agree and disagree on many different things, but if you've got a vast majority of people saying this isn't nice to hear and I feel uncomfortable going to watch something as simple as a football game, listening to that, then all you've got to do is listen. And you know, credit to the club, credit to Jürgen for getting on camera and sorting it out straight away. And I think it's just, you've just got to be consistent with these things now, because this certainly won't be the last instance, I'm sure.
Yeah, I like the tone of the message. I mean, Jürgen always gets it right. He's an amazing communicator, Andy. But I like the tone of the conversation between the two of them. It wasn't sort of preachy. It wasn't about, you know, as I say, you know, wanted to sort of slag people off or criticize too heavily. It was about sort of education. It was about getting people to think a little bit more about what they do sing in the ground. And Neil put out a really good email on the Anfield Wrap earlier in the week on a similar vein. If we get to decide what we do in a football ground, you don't have to sing this song. There's a million songs you can sing. You know, you can actively choose not to sing this and you'll be fine. You know what I mean? You're not losing anything. You know, sing about other stuff instead. And I think that's the sort of the right attitude to have it, in my opinion, which is that rather than just sing this song that's a bit rubbish anyway, why don't we sing something else that actually helps the players?
Yeah. And you're right. The song was exactly right. And there was something Jürgen said, which was interesting and I think is important. And I think we've got our own, as they said, you know, I've been a coach for 34 years or whatever it was, and he said that he basically saying times have changed now, and I said things then and I wouldn't say now. That was kind of like the message underneath it. You know, and I think he's spot on. What Paul was saying on there, and I think what's been coming up today, I think Joe Connolly said something on social media which was brilliant as well, saying, you know, it's not for basically sit down, shut up and listen to the people who are being offended, but it's not for us to say what is offensive and what isn't. It's for the group concerned to say, well, no, look, I think this is. And there's a parallel with something else that I'm not going to get into because I don't believe in the what about it about it either. Also worth noting as well with this, and this isn't the first time Liverpool have took positive steps with this. Jordan Henderson last year put himself front and centre as well, and Peter Moore when he was institute at Liverpool as well.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
That went on a couple of the marches. And you know what? If it's been a channel to open up a conversation and educate people, because I've learned stuff, then, you know, there is a positive out of it. I'm not saying it's worth that to get this. But it's been an eye-opener. And if we can talk more openly about these things, then great. And I can't see any negatives to it. There's lots of good to say. I'm really poor at articulating it, but yeah, it feels genuine, which is the main thing. It feels like it hasn't just been done as a box tick inclusivity activity that the club have done, and for the manager to put himself front and center in such a way and own it, in so much as that, you know, no one had to question the manager. I think it's positive, and I'm like you, John. I'm proud of what the club has done.
Yeah, Andy used the word genuine there, and. I think that's right here, and that's how it comes across when you watch the conversation. It's two people just trying to make a situation a little bit better, and not saying that they've got all the answers to every problem, and not saying that we can solve what other clubs are doing, and you know, that's what we can only look after ourselves, really. We can't worry about what people sing about us, or can't, you know, justify our own behaviour because we, you know, pointed to what other fans might or might not sing when they come to Liverpool. We can only live our own values, really, and our own values are inclusivity, our own values are unity, are strength, and that's the big flag that goes up on the cop every week. And unity means everyone. That's what it means, and it means that, you know, saying if you're one of us, then you're one of us, and you're part of our crowd, you're part of our team, you're part of our, you know, mob, if you like, and we all sort of stand together, and that really came out for me as well.
100%, John. I mean, you control the controllables, and you know what other people are going to sing about us. We have no effect on that. You know, we can't stop it. We might not like it, but we can't stop it. But we can control what we do in stadiums. And I think, you know, Neil's email, what Jürgen said today with Paul, you know, absolutely spot on. And like most things, the manager does, he tends to find the right tone, and he certainly does with this. And I think he was absolutely spot on. You know, I would hate to think that there's people in a crowd, whether it be Anfield or elsewhere in the away end, that are sitting there or standing there and they're feeling uncomfortable because certain songs are being sung. It's not acceptable. We don't need to do it. So I think, you know, there's times where we have all got to be a little bit better. And some of it is down to education. You know, people will have sang that song over a number of years and maybe not understood. Well, you understand it now because you've been told. You've been told by people who were offended by it. So don't be a dickhead about it. Pack it in, move on. There's plenty of other songs. It impacts on us, not even in the slightest in terms of that song. So park it and sing something else. The other thing the manager said was, in terms of making a difference to him and his team, that song's make no difference to him or his team. Singing the names of the players, singing about Liverpool, whether we never walk alone or whatever it may be, they're the songs that are impactful and will have a positive kind of impact on the team. So let's focus on them. So absolutely, couldn't agree more with what the manager said. And I think, you know, I've seen one or two other people on social media just kind of really reinforcing the point that Jürgen made. I know Gary Lineker said something earlier on today. But no, absolutely, no, fantastic from the club. I'm really pleased he came out and nipped it in the bud nice and quick, because, you know, even a few days later, you're still seeing people on social media arguing about the rights and wrongs of it. No, there is no argument for me. It's wrong. It's upsetting people. Let's park it, move on. And as I say, we set our focus and attention on other songs that actually, you know, do have an impact on the team.
So John, can I just dive in? Just thing I was trying to articulate. It's not as if they're trying to take away some great freedom from you. Do you know what I mean? They're asking you not to sing a song that's offensive and a bit dickheady. It's not like that, you know. It's ridiculous that some of the arguments against it, where they sing this and they sing that, or it doesn't mean this, it doesn't mean that. Just don't be. They're not taking anything away. What are they actually effectively asking you to not to do?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, we'll move on to your questions now. We'll do about 10 minutes or so of AFQ football. So we've been asking for your questions, and there's quite a few come on our YouTube, which is great. And I'll do this first one. I'll start with you, Sean. Do you think Joe Gomez will be wearing two hats this season as centre-back, but also as a right-back this season as backup to Trent? What do you think the season holds for Joe?
I think it depends if Nico stays, which I think he will. I know there's still a bit of time left, but I think if you're looking at right back up with Williams, Milner potentially, I think let's just keep our centre backs this season. Eh?
What do you think, Andy? What do you think this season holds for Joe Gomez?
I've never seen him in a hat.
That's fair.
I did genuinely think that was going to be a question about hats then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he looks amazing in there. No, we are. I think I spoke about it earlier in the show. The one area that does concern me with depth is fullback position. Simikas has acquitted himself well in the small period he's been there, but he has proven capable, Joe, at right back. And maybe I'll put it another way. I would think if all things being well and everyone's fit and Trent wasn't, Gomez would get in at right back ahead of Neco Williams, notwithstanding the brilliant goal that Neco Williams scored behind closed doors.
Yeah, absolute belter. What I would say is as well, Ian, is it's a way of getting Joe games, and I think, you know, he's had this big long injury. He'll want to be playing sooner rather than later. Obviously, if Virgil and Matip, you know, the partnership's going great, you're not necessarily going to be wanting to break that up just for the sake of it. So it's another way of getting him some game time and getting rid of that, some of that rustiness.
To be honest, John, I don't want to see him a fullback. I think he's a great centre half. I think he's probably one of the best in Europe when he's fit and firing, and he's at his absolute best. And I think we've seen glimpses of that. Unfortunately, Joe's had this, you know, really unfortunate kind of habit of just picking up these injuries. And, you know, he has that one at Burnley, funnily enough, when he's playing fullback and he's up and down the line. And I just think the demands that you're facing as a fullback, certainly in this team, are much different than if you're playing centre-half. And, you know, I think for him, to help him get over his injuries, I think centre-half's perfect for him. That's not to say you're not tested there, of course you are, but I think it's a different kind of test. And I just want to see Joe Gomez, when he is playing, I want to see him playing at centre-half. And I think he'll get enough opportunities, because I think, you know, we know Matip's got, you know, an injury history as well, where he'll miss games. And you think, you know, when it becomes two games or three games a week, that's not maybe for Matip. I think you've got to be careful with him. There'll be plenty of opportunities for Joe Gomez. And as I said before, when he's pairing, there's not many better out there. His recovery pace is second to none. Yeah. He complements Virgil really, really well. So I'm looking forward to seeing Joe Gomez back for Liverpool, but playing centre-half.
Yeah, okay. We shall see. Thanks a lot for that question. The next one I want to go for is Chufalagi, I think it's pronounced. And he says, I'll go to you again, Sean. Do you think Nat Phillips will stay now that Ben Davis is out? So Ben Davis has gone on loan to Sheffield United, I think it was. Yeah. So, what does that mean for Nat, do you think?
Don't get me wrong. I'd love him to stay. Absolutely love the fella. I just think it's not really fair on him. Like, after the season he's had in the Champions League, the Premier League, scoring goals, securing top four, I just think, yeah, probably being quite unselfish here. I'd love him to be there as like a luxury, what would he be, fifth backup option. But I think also from a more from a economical view from the club. We could get a lot of money from him now. I don't know how much we're going to get from him in 12 months' time. I think maybe ideal scenario is that, you know, we don't know how the centre-backs are going to react to coming back. You know, Matip hasn't got the best record. Van Dijk is by his own admission, still a bit rusty. Gomez is still coming back. So, you know, ideally, we can keep him there as a backup option till the January transfer window and maybe still try and get at least 10 million for him. I think that would be ideal. But I think keeping on Oldham for another 12 months, he's just going to devalue. And I don't think it's fair on him based on what he's contributed to the club.
What do you think, Andy?
Similar lines, but I'd sell. I think for the player's benefit and for the club's benefit, I think, you know, he's got an opportunity there to set himself up for life when he gets his move, because he'll be getting a good Premier League wage on a decent contract. And I think it's optimum time for the club to get him. I get what Sean's talking about, you know, the reliability of Matip and Gomez and one thing and the other, but also we're heavily stocked in midfield now, and I know it's not ideal, but there is a better option in centre half if ever needs to be than that Phillips, and that's Fabinho can drop in there if it really did get.
I'm sweating already.
I mean, if it did get hectic, so, but no, you've got, you don't, I don't think you need more than four senior centre halves, and last year was just an absolute freak. You know, you talk about Van Dijk coming back, it was an impact injury, and I feel a little bit sorry for Joe Gomez, because basically every injury apart from his last one has been an impact, and I think they can manage it. So now with the best, but I wouldn't, don't get me wrong, if he sticks around then great, you know, good for us and good for him, but I just think for the sake of the lad's career, you know, he should look to get his move and go with everyone's best wishes, and Liverpool should be equipped enough to deal with it.
Ian, not Phillips. I think Sean made an interesting point before about the fact that there's maybe no rush on it. You know, we've got till the end of this window. There's two more games where they can assess it, but also maybe with half an eye on January. You know, what would you do?
I don't think January is the worst shout. Just to maybe, you know, keep him around with one eye on the lads who have just come back from injury. One thing that can't happen, John, you can't leave yourself short there. You know, yeah, what I mean? They've got to keep at least, I would suggest, a fifth one around, and whether that's Reece Williams or Nat Phillips, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But they can't leave themselves short again. They can't take any chances. You know, you've been bitten once, and listen, they took a gamble, never paid off. Can't happen again. You just can't. So they're going to have to make sure they've got enough cover. So it'll all come down to, what are they seeing from the likes of Matip? What are they seeing from Gomez? What are they seeing from Virgil? Are there any concerns there? Are there any worries? Or do they look like they're going to be fine? Even then, you'd say, well, let's just err on the side of caution and keep one of the, I say young lads, we know Nat's not that young, but keep one of them around just in case. But I think, similar to Andy, for his own personal development, you can imagine him saying to the manager, listen, if something comes in and it's decent and it's Premier League, I want to go. I've had a taste of it. I fucking loved it. I want more of it. And why wouldn't you? And as Andy says, an opportunity to go and set himself up, because he won't be on the huge sums of money that some of the others are on, because why would he be? He got given an opportunity last year, and listen, he did far better and he exceeded probably all of our expectations in terms of some of those performances. And by the way, he chips in with a goal at Burnley as well. So listen, he owes us nothing. But I think for him, it would be nice to see him go and get a Premier League move.
Yeah, I think the club will probably end up doing what's best for Nat and sort of seeing what's coming, because that's how they've worked in the past. Okay, very last question before we go. And it's from 1892 Reds podcaster, Ayalads, and he says, Sadio Mane, Keita, potentially Salah going to AFCON. Is it very important to get some signings in before the window shuts? And every time I forget about AFCON, and then every time he brings it up, I get into a cold sweat. To be honest with you, I'll be like, oh, shit, that. I mean, it's, the games haven't fallen too badly, is what you'd say. But I might even have it wrapped up by then. Hey, who knows? Let's be positive. But it does worry me.
No, exactly. I mean, to be honest, it's just another side effect of COVID, because they did reschedule it originally for the summer, didn't they? They run concurrently with the Euros, and it is, and I think that's the plan going forward. It is a condensed tournament this year, so that you're looking at maximum three games. You wonder whether, I mean, I know it's a big ask, because I think we forget how much these tournaments matter to the players, because to us, yeah, it's something that doesn't fucking matter. But you know, is it beyond the realms of for the club to say to, you know, the National Association as well, that we'll send them, can you look after them a little bit? Yeah. Or even say to the players, well, look, we're in the mix here, we're right up there. So say but when it starts, we're at the top of the table, we're just by a bit. Could that change the thinking about whether they go or not? I don't know. It is a challenge, but it's something that, you know, and you can think it, you can cause your own little bubble. It doesn't just affect Liverpool. Liverpool aren't the only team that are going to lose players to the African Cup of Nations.
Yeah.
So you know, what's the answer? And I'm not. Are you not telling me that the amazing brains at Liverpool FC haven't considered this question? It's not like they're going to wake up like a week before the African Nations and go, oh, fucking hell, forgot about that. So
okay, I will.
Well, yeah, there you go. I forgot about that. Yeah, where's Mo? Oh, he's at the airport. Ah, shit. So yeah, they'll plan for it. So, but let's see what happens.
Yeah, the games haven't fallen too badly in terms of sort of what I've seen. There'll be sort of an FA Cup fourth round as well, where we'll probably get drawn against Brazil 1970 or something. But yeah, Andy makes a good point there about recognising that it's important for the players. And you know, Mo Salah, we effectively stopped going to the Olympics. Well, we asked nicely and it was a go, and he has to sort of end up going. But they will want to go and they will want to do well. And you've sort of got to respect that. But at the same time, hope it doesn't sort of derail our season too much, I guess.
Is that for me, John, was it?
Yes, Ian, sorry.
I think in terms of the games, I think they nailed on two, or the ones they think they're going to miss, Brentford at home and Palace away. So, on the face of it, they feel like more than winnable games. I suppose, you know, it's the unknown, is it? You don't know what's happening with the squad at that time, in terms of other injuries. So, whilst you can say, well, it's these three players, well, we've got no idea what the squad looks like at that point. So, it does make me a little bit nervous. And, you know, and coming back to the kind of heart of the question, you know, I am on record as saying I would like to see one or two more come through the door. And that's not to say I don't think we can challenge without them. I think we can. I think, you know, that first 11, I mean, I said before about stacks of options. There are a lot of options at the minute. And that first 11 is, it's not far off being as good as it gets, to be honest. It's quality. Yeah. If they all come back as you want them to in terms of the injuries and stuff, it's there or thereabouts. But I think, for me, just maybe one or two more, you know, in those midfield and forward areas, I think it makes a huge difference. And I know, you know, we're not going to go and do the likes of the business that maybe City have done or United have done. And I don't think I'm asking for that, to be honest, but I am asking for maybe one or two additions just to give the manager a little bit of a helping hand in those key areas. And I think there's something around succession planning as well. And I think the sooner that starts, the better, because we know there's an age concern with maybe one or two of the, certainly the forward lads who are all kind of coming to 30 or are 30. So yeah, John, for me, one or two more in those areas wouldn't do any harm.
Mbappe in the 1st of January then, yeah.
that's just a pre-contract, though. He won't be able to play till the summer, so it doesn't help the African nation problems. Liam Cotter put in the comments here about potentially having to quarantine when they come back, which has just stressed me out as well. I don't even want to think about that. But generally speaking, Sean, one or two more additions for you as well, or are you happy just to roll with what we've got?
I mean, it'd be nice, wouldn't it, in a perfect world, but with Klopp banging the drum of both having a massive squad already, I think it might maybe hinge on what happens with Shaqiri, which seems to have gone a bit quieter since that last came about. So it'd be nice, you know, the AFCON's in Jan, isn't it, coming off the back of a heavy festive period, which did seem to break us a bit in the season just gone, but that was a lot more congested season. So it'd be nice. I really wouldn't be shocked if he didn't. I also wouldn't lose sleep if he didn't. But I am hoping, you know, if you look at the year we won the league, we just went full pelt up until about January and it was pretty much in the bag by then. So I think, you'd be hoping we're up there or thereabouts, and he's got enough to manage. And the games you'd like to think we could get through. But yeah, I guess you've still got January as well to maybe think about whether you'd get something for as good value then. I don't know. It just seems like it'd be so important at the time, but it just does feel like such a short-term fix for someone you've then got on the, you know, on the wage bill for however many years. So I think generally from trends that we see with Liverpool, I think we try and make do with what we've got.
We shall see. I'm sure there'll be some activity in terms of ins and outs between now and the end of the transfer window, at the end of the month. And the Anfield Wrap, we'll be going through all that. We've got gutter shows, lots of them. There's talking transfers on the video as well, and lots of transfer talk where we see what is going on with Liverpool between now and the end of the window. Also, if you want much more previews of the Burnley game, we've got Team Talk tomorrow, which will be hosted by Josh Sexton, which will be straight after Jurgen Klopp's press conferences. Video previews out as well tomorrow, and then the best post-match reaction anywhere from the L4 Boozers on Saturday, audio and video. Really, really looking forward to it. Can't wait to see all your lovely faces on Saturday. I'll have a 290 pint. Thanks a lot to Sean, thanks a lot to Ian, and thanks a lot to Andy, and absolutely up the Reds on Saturday. Sports Social Podcast Network.